Want to have your own business but don't want to start from scratch? Franchising might be the answer you're looking for. Welcome to the Level Up with Nick Lopez Show, the show that brings you thought leaders in business, franchising, and high-performance personal development. Whether you're a buyer, seller, franchisee, franchisor, or consultant, find everything you need to know about franchising right here. Own a business without the pain and financial losses that come with creating it. Find the time, freedom, and financial independence you can have through entrepreneurship. Learn how franchising can help you get there. Listen up and get ready for another episode of The Level Up with Nick Lopez Show.
Welcome to The Level Up Show with Nick Lopez, where we have the absolute pleasure of learning from thought leaders in franchising, business, and high-performance personal development. Today's guest most certainly fits that bill. She is an immigrant from Romania and came here as an au pair with a vision to create her American dream. She currently has over 1,000 realtors on her team. She has done nearly 100 million in real estate transactions. In the real estate world, she is known as the social media queen. She owns GoGo Realty with EXP. GoGo Bethke, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. And it's GoGo's Real Estate, not GoGo Realty.
GoGo's Real Estate, absolutely. Well, if you Google GoGo, you will see her come up on many different platforms. It shouldn't be hard to find her. It's really a pleasure to have you on the show today. I'm looking forward to your expertise and your knowledge, being able to share it with our audience and help them level up. So let's get started. In terms of your brand, how do you position yourself in the world of real estate, GoGo?
Well, you are your brand, right? So it's not like ever really overthink it or think about too much. I sell me, right? My job as a realtor is to make sure everybody knows who I am and they know what I do and they know where to find me. So as long as you're selling yourself and your services, you're doing all of the right things. So it's really not complicated. It's just this house doesn't sell itself. The realtor sells the house, right? And their skills and their marketing skills and negotiation skills. So at the end of the day, you're selling the realtor. You're not selling the house, right? So that's pretty much it. As long as the faster you get comfortable with selling yourself and your services, the faster you're going to create a meaning for yourself in the industry.
Wow, you said you're selling the relationship, not the real estate. That's incredible. I wouldn't think that that would be the approach, but I talk about it so much. Business is all about people and it's all about relationships. You know, whether it's franchising or painting, the worlds that I come from, clearly not in real estate, but you are. And I think it's about like 80% of people don't make it past their first year in real estate. And you're somebody that barely spoke English and entered the world of real estate and, you know, just started with a Facebook page and began with a genuine foot forward of just presenting yourself and creating relationships with strangers through social media. And it really just built from there. I love how you said, you know, I don't really think about it too much. It's just who I am. I often say that, you know, it's hard for me to be somebody that I'm not at work, right? I try to be who I am in my personal life at work. And, you know, I just am who I am. And it sounds like you subscribe to that same approach. And it all comes down to relationships. But I do want to ask a little bit of some follow-up questions here. When you are thinking about posting something online, you know, being the social media queen, developing that reputation within real estate, clearly you know a thing or two about social media. As you're about to post, what's going through your mind? Clearly, you're thinking about your brand or how you want to be portrayed. What's your approach toward creating content and posting something online from your brand standpoint?
Again, I think everything goes back to the basics. When you're true to yourself and true to your brand, and when you're selling yourself, every time I type something or I think something or I achieve something or I'm letting the world know what's going on in the market or a new business that I started, right? It's always coming from the heart. It's always coming from me directly, explaining my thoughts on this specific subject, right? So as long as you're doing you all day, every day, you don't have to, again, you don't have to overthink it. I'm never posting something that I didn't post myself so sad. So like, for example, let's say I have an event and I'm speaking at, right? I'm going to type up, hey guys, I'm going here. I'm going to do an event the subject. I would love you to come because I do love you to come, right? Like, these are all the truths. So again, when you are building a brand around yourself, it's very simple to stay true to your brand. It's very simple to come up with ideas because you don't have to come up with ideas. Those things are already happening to you. Those thoughts are already in your head, right? You just have to put it in writing, take a picture, and post it.
So what you're saying is posting the content is what matters.
Yeah, and I post the things that's already happening to you. It's not like I wake up today and be like, oh, what am I going to post about today? It's like, oh, shoot, yeah, I'm speaking in Michigan on the 23rd and 24th, and the 23rd is a women's event, and the 24th is a rewards event, right? So then I just pretty much talk about that. Hey, guys, I'm coming to Michigan. I'm March 23rd. It's a women's event. I can't wait to see you. Here's the link. I'm the 24th, blah, 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 right? So whatever's literally happening in my life to me, and if I can invite others to it, or if it's a life lesson, then I can share so others can learn from it. It's pretty much, I just post that. It's that simple.
And you're just doing that right from your phone.
Yeah. As long as you have Wi-Fi, which currently I don't. That's what I wanted to say. As long as you have Wi-Fi, you get to do it. But currently I don't. I can hear it. It's going in and out. It's probably going in and out on your end as well.
We're holding up pretty strong so far, Gogo. We haven't lost connection.
Okay.
Yeah, but...
Oh, good. Okay. Yeah, as long as you have Wi-Fi, right? Like today, I had to improvise our Wi-Fi pod in our neighborhood, and I have no SaaS receiver, so I had to leave. But as long as you roll with the punches, right? Like, as long as you have one of these, no matter where you go, right? I have one of these. You do too. You never leave the house without it. And if you do, you go back and get it, right? So you have what it takes. You just need to grab it out of your pocket. You need to get comfortable with taking a picture. You need to get comfortable in front of the camera and talking on videos. Video is huge. It might take you couple tries, right, to get comfortable in front of the camera, but get comfortable because that's what's going to pay the bills. And that's pretty much it. That's really what it takes, is to having a cell phone with you, what you do, and taking it out of your pocket.
So what do you do if you have very few followers? Do you just keep posting and hope for exposure, or do you need to...
No, that means you're posting very boring stuff. What you're posting is boring. That's why people don't follow. So you need to post more interesting things, right? Don't say things like happy hump day. Like, everybody knows it's freaking Wednesday, right? Like, don't say happy Monday. Don't post your lunch because we all had lunch. Don't post your kids because we all have kids. Nobody cares about your cat, right? So you have to make it interesting enough that they would actually want to follow you. So if you don't have the following, is you're doing something wrong, or you're not posting interesting enough stuff where people would want to take the initiative to follow you.
So posting enough content is one half of it. And the other is being engaging and interesting. So, you know, when you're about to post something, Gogo, and you're thinking about it, to you, you just mentioned, hey, kids, cats, hump day, like those are things that aren't really going to get people excited. What have you noticed from your experience that are themes of what folks are interested in seeing when it comes to the content that you post?
Well, a couple of things, right? Anything educational, anything that you can teach another fellow human to learn something without having to learn it on their own skin, right? Because life lessons hurt. So if you can learn from somebody else's pain, not your own, that's better and you learn faster. Also sharing knowledge, where if you know something and it's going to take someone 11 years, like I have now 12 years of experience in real estate, right? If I can teach you something today, but it took me 12 years to learn, and you're going to pay attention and implement what you learned, right, then you're going to catapult your business and reach that same level of success much faster because you don't have to go through 12 years of trial, right? The other thing I think is the FOMO, is the fear of missing out, right? If you can show them the good life, if you can show them what opportunities you have created for yourself and what kind of level of life you have achieved, right? It shows to other people that A, it's possible, and B, it creates what's called FOMO, right? It creates fear of missing out. So now they want it too. And they're going to follow you because they know that success leads clues. So if they follow me, they're going to pick up little things along the way, right? That is going to help them get successful much faster. And then also something funny, right? Like, I lost my front tooth 2 years ago. So I didn't have a front tooth for I didn't have a front tooth for 8 months. And I literally rocked it. Like, I rocked the heck of out. I had a 3-day pity party at first. And then I was like, I can do this. I can be the social media queen and no front tooth, right? And I actually got a ton of followers in that period of my life because they saw my real self and they saw that I go through life. Just like everybody goes through life, right? They all have hardships. And so again, doing funny things and then the yelling stuff too, not just the good. I like to say the good and the ugly. right? I'll show you everything. I mean, there's an ugly side of success. There's a very fun side of success, and there's in the middle. And you kind of have to show them all, right? Like there are days that I'm super stressed out and things are going south. And there are days that one good thing is happening after another. And so I try to even it out and make sure that everybody understands it's not a walk in the park. Sometimes it's a walk in Jurassic Park.
A walk in Jurassic Park. I love it. Yeah, that's so true. I seen this meme where somebody was laying down steps and each step was success. And they were taking the steps, like they were, each step said failure, right? And, but ultimately was representing success. And so each step was failure versus another set of, or another example was the same steps on the same person's head. And they all said failure. And it's just kind of two representations of how to approach the failures, the learnings, the lessons, the growth that success requires. But demonstrating that and showing that over social media, along with, hey, many years of lessons and everything else that you mentioned that are real and beyond just kind of simple cliches, right? So that's the beauty of today's social media. You can, you know, right from your pocket, document the success stories that is required to be successful. So in that vein, Gogo, I would love to hear from you. What is your approach when it comes to high performance personal development? Are there any rhythms that you have, anything that you do to maintain a consistent high level of performance?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I usually joke and say, and I joke, but I say it all the time still today, but it's kind of a joke. Show me your calendar and I'll show you your bank account, right? So for me, my calendar is huge. I honor it. I hate when people reschedule a no-show. I actually have a very strict no-show policy. If someone no-shows, I will never talk to them again because they had zero respect for my time. And if they have no respect for me, there's no need for us to be in any level of business together, right? So I'm huge on routines too. Like I'm a late owl. So I go to bed between 1 and 2 a.m. and I wake up around 8 o'clock, 8:30. That's not what most people do, right? Most people will, the 4 a.m. or 5 a.m. risers. I just don't do that because that's not when my brain functions the best, right? My brain functions the best at night when the world is sleeping and I'm by myself and I can think. I use the time to kind of get to the end of my phone and think my thoughts through. And then eventually I just fall asleep, right? In the morning when I wake up, I'm scheduled from the moment I wake up, usually back to back to back. I work Monday to Wednesday. I don't work Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sundays. I took that off for the rest of my life. I retired myself from Thursday to Mondays, right? But on Monday to Wednesday, I hit it very hard, right? And I'm a huge, my calendar is my step-by-step process, right, for the day. So the night before I go to bed, I usually look at my calendar. I am scheduled months out, so there isn't much that I can move on the calendar, right? So when I look at it the night before, I know, do I have to have makeup on by 9 a.m.? Is it okay if I put it on later in the day? Like if I have a podcast, sorry, I didn't get to put makeup on today. Or to do my hair. Usually I do. But today the whole Wi-Fi situation threw me to a curb. So that's pretty much it, right? It's like I am huge on doing life the way you want to do it. One of my favorite sayings is that if you love what you do, you never work a day in your life. I don't feel like I work. I feel like I get to do this. I feel fortunate that I get paid for doing this, right? And that's pretty much it. I want everybody to find what they love to do and then get really good at it. Like become the best. If you decide that painting is what you want to do, like be amazing at it where you cannot be replaced, where people know that they're never going to ask you to reduce your commission or your fees, right? Because they know the level of service that they're going to get from you. So same with me. Many agents struggle with, or people ask me all the time to reduce my commission. I couldn't tell you the last time someone asked me to reduce my commission because they know what they get. Right. So I like to say you get paid for the hour, what you bring to the hour, the smaller you get, the more you get paid. So as you can show your knowledge, your marketing skills, your negotiation skills, in your case, your painting skills, right? They know what they're getting. They know who they're hiring. They would never use Joe Schmo off the street over there because they are $2,000 cheaper because they're also going to get the type of service, right? So you have to become really good at what you do. You are as good as your word. You have to show up. And I think that is my hardest part with referring painters in the past. Right, is that I refer them and they no show. And then that looks bad on me, right? Or they say, yeah, sure, no problem. But they take half the payment, we can start in 2 weeks. And then they just, 2 months later, they're still nowhere to be found, right? So I think that is at least my experience in the past with painters. I'm assuming that is not what you guys do, right? But I wanted to bring it into the conversation because your word is, you are as good as your word, right? And it takes 2 seconds to make the first impression, but a lifetime to change it.
Wow, that's such a profound statement, right? You spend all this time building this relational equity, and in a second, it can be gone. And you're always, you know, it's the book Relentless, right? The coach for Michael Jordan. And he talks about the type of winner that Jordan was and how he was different than other winners. But he recently came out with another book called Winning, and it talks about the ongoing effort of winning, right? It's not just a one and done, it's, or a couple times, it's the ongoing commitment, the marathon of the behavior and the high performance habits that are required to earn the rent, right? That the rent is due every month. And success can seem so finite, right? You get to this point of success, but the reality is that success is defined every week, every month, every quarter, every year. So I love that you said that, but I'm curious, the first thing that you said was your schedule, your calendar, right? And you know, you've gotten to a position now where you're working Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Was that always the case, or did that change? If so, when did that change and why?
I'm laughing here. Yeah, no, that was not always the case. Being a realtor, we work all the time. We work evenings, we work weekends, we work holidays, we work Mondays to Fridays, we work all the time, right? Even when I got my husband out of corporate America and he got into real estate, one day he looked up and he goes, let me get this straight. So I came from a 40 hours work, right, regular job, 9 to 5 with matching 401k and a great salary and holidays off and vacation time to come work for myself 90 hours a week with no guaranteed income, with no matching 401k. And now I have to work weekends. And I was like, yeah, that's being an entrepreneur, right? But now 12 years in, now I get to choose who I work with. I get to choose when I work. I worked very hard in the last 12 years where I can say that we have financial freedom. We have location freedom. And so now we live in Florida. I do run a team. My real estate team is in Michigan. I'm actually licensed in Michigan, but now I live in Florida. So I'm not licensed in Florida. I'm not planning to be licensed in Florida. So I moved down here so I can actually enjoy my life and enjoy the weather year round. And during COVID, we kind of learned that you get to do business from absolutely anywhere, right? As long as you have Wi-Fi. Currently, I'm doing business from Starbucks because I don't have Wi-Fi, right? But it taught us a lot of freedom, right? And so I realized also last year, one of my best friends passed away. And when she passed away, I realized we lived about 8 to 12 minutes from each other, plus minus traffic, right? And I haven't seen her in like 3 months because I was so busy. And I'm like, I said, this is ridiculous. Like, I am making all this money, but I don't have time to spend it. I don't have time to enjoy life. I don't have time to go out to dinner and go on a girls trip with my girlfriend. So I said, it has to change. So I made that decision that I'm no longer going to work Thursdays to Mondays, but I am scheduled months out. So this was in May of last year. My first non-working Thursday was in November because I was already so far scheduled out, right? So even when I make a decision, it's going to happen sometimes in the future, sometimes if not instant, right? Because again, you're as good as your word. So if I give my word to these people up until November, then I'm going to be there. Now I have to be there, right? Now the change is going to have to happen in the future when I don't have to say, then I don't have to cancel on people. So no, I used to work like a madwoman, and don't get me wrong, I probably work more in the 3 days than an average person works from a Monday to Friday because I squeeze so much into those days. I also have like 17 assistants, so it's not a one-man show. I have a lot of help. I have the most amazing team. They help me with anything from my DMs to social media posts to scheduling my flights to you name it, running all of my businesses. We have multiple businesses today. So it is a lot of work to not to work for the rest of your life. It is a lot of work for a while, so you don't have to work for the rest of your life. I should say that.
So you built your lifestyle over time, right? It's been 12 years of building your empire, but realizing, okay, what do I want to do with my time? How do I want to live my life? Now that I have built a team and infrastructure, really what you set out to do, right? And many, many years of putting in the grind and the work and the sacrifice, the investment. I know personally, you know, I didn't take a Saturday off in my 20s. And I looked at that as an investment, right? COVID hit. And, you know, as opposed to taking time off or being at home and kind of letting things blow over. You know, I personally work harder than I've ever worked in my life, right? I woke up at 3 a.m. and I worked till 8 p.m. for all of 2020. And I did it and I enjoyed it. I didn't do it begrudgingly. I did it because I knew I was getting ahead and I was investing in my future, right? So that future self will thank you for that investment, right? But much like your husband, he went from a secure job, 401k, benefits, time off, to wait, hold on, you're telling me I get none of that and I need to work harder than I've ever worked before? Well, that's not indefinite, right? So being a franchisor, being in the world of franchising, you know, as you're talking, I'm realizing it's, you know, very similar to what you do in real estate in that you're giving folks American dream through entrepreneurship. Franchising, we do the very same thing, but what's similar is entrepreneurship, and you have to break in, you have to put in the work, you have to invest in your future self and the future lifestyle that you want. So I appreciate you being an example, Gogo, of what that investment in your future self can look like, right? That sounds incredible. Coming from going to Michigan State myself.
I know people think it's an overnight success. Yeah, it's a lot of work of the past 12 years to be overnight success, right? And one of my favorite saying is that nothing works unless you do.
Isn't that the truth, right? I always say behavior equals outcome. And that's beautiful, Gogo, because you control the outcome through the behavior. Unless it's the wrong behavior, then you need to level up and learn the right behavior. So you're in that world now, right? You're teaching others the right behavior. You're demonstrating the FOMO, right, of what your hard work has done in your career. And I'm sure that's a great demonstration to the folks on your team that have joined your team to have what you have, right, as the leader of your organization. And so I do want to talk to you a little bit about when it comes to posting FOMO and some of what you mentioned, you know, what are your pillars of social media when it comes to building your brand, creating a certain perception about who you are, what you represent? Do you have some pillars around sharing that with your audience?
Not really. I mean, everything in my life is an open book. Right? I truly post whatever I want. I think some people are like, yeah, but I'm pretty private. Right. And so am I. Right. You only see what I allow you to see. You only see until my comfort level. And we all have different comfort levels of what we are comfortable sharing on social media. Right. And so just maybe push that envelope a little bit today. Right. Like, don't get me wrong. If you follow me, you're barely ever going to see my kids. Right. I have two boys and my life is, I'm not going to so set came from out. Right. Like they're a part of it, but they're not a part of it. Not my business life. Right. So because of that, you're very seldom going to see them there. Maybe you'll see them on Mother's Day. You might see them on Christmas and I post a family photo. But other than that, they're not in my feed almost ever. And in my stories, very seldom. Right. So you get to control what you want to post and what you want your brand to look like. And over time, you're going to feel more and more comfortable the level of so sad how much you want to share with the world. Even then, I mean, do we all have skeletons in our closets? Absolutely. You're just not going to share that. Right. Like you get to control how much the world gets to steal of you.
I appreciate you saying that. I've thought about it recently. You know, do I include my kids in social media or even just in my world as an entrepreneur, really wanting them to catch a glimpse of my world? I guess I've just been realizing lately that they frankly don't know what I do. And I've enjoyed that. But, you know, as they're getting older, I'm curious about how much I want to include them in my world from a professional standpoint. And, you know, I've been thinking about social media potentially being a fun way to include them and maybe do some spiffs around just kid questions when it comes to business or our space and painting. But to your point, that's all personal preference, right? And you choose what you put.
And that could be super cute. I actually love that idea. And that could be super cute, right? You could use it for marketing purposes. And I also think, how old are your kids?
My oldest is 7 and my youngest is 3.
Okay. So they're in that cute age, right? Like I would probably play with that and just say, hey, what does daddy do for a living? What do I do when I leave the house? What do I do? Right. And just listen to them and see what they think that you do, right? And then post that. Like that would be adorable and people would love that, right? What I mean by that is I'm not putting my kid's soccer game on the internet, right? Like I'm not so such showing my, it's kind of for safety reasons too, right? Like I just don't want anyone to be able to tag them. I don't want them to be like, oh, your mom is Google, right? Like I want them to have their own childhood and have their own experiences without people putting together who they are, right? And that's why I kind of keep on the side. But I am a huge believer, like I'm not huge on, this might sound weird out there for some people, but I'm not huge on education. I'm self-taught. I didn't have college education. So I don't think my children are going to go to college. And if they want to go to college, I'm not going to force them, right? So I think self-education and choosing what you want to be and going down on that path and going to events and going to camps and, you know, those kind of things that you can be surrounded with people who have the same interests. I think that is very important. So we do take them, like last year, we come to Tony Robbins, UPW, Unleash the Power Within. So I try to lay the foundation for them. God bless you. I try to lay the foundation for them. So if entrepreneurship is, I don't know, genetic, right? Then maybe they can get the bug earlier than I got the bug. I didn't get the bug until I was 29 years old and 41 years old now. So I'm thinking, what if they could get the bug when they're 14, right? Like that's a totally different future than I had starting at 29. So I do believe that involving your children that way is important. I just don't want to have them necessarily public facing all the time.
Yeah, I appreciate that. That's great context. I want to change it up a little bit. And, you know, of course, me being a painter, I'd love to shift into some of your perspective on relationships with painters. So when it comes to real estate and somebody buying or selling a home, from your standpoint, what role does a paint company play, in if any at all?
Oh my gosh, I tell myself all the time that a $40 can of paint is going to make a $4,000 difference in your price, right? So painting is very important. We have amazing relationship with painters, right? We have what's called the preferred vendors list. So when a new client comes to us, dramatically the very first email that is sent to them is a preferred vendors list that goes out. And of course, we have multiple painters on there that we have worked in the past. So I think every agent, if you don't have a preferred vendors list, you need to start working on that. And it's an Excel sheet with pretty much sections of lenders, appraisers, title companies, painters, plumbers, electricians, like anything, moving companies, like anything that somebody buying or selling the home could possibly need, right? And then being a realtor, we are not allowed to steer. So then we have to have multiple of the same, right? So if I have one painter, I have to have two more. If I have one lender, I have to have at least two more, right? So at least three of everything. Now, most of our vendors, I should say, they give some sort of a discount to our clients, right? So the very first email that goes out to buyer seller, we pretty much just welcome them to working with our team. And so excited they're thinking about buying or selling. And then we also introduce our preferred vendors list and say, any, you know, save this email because you're going to be coming back to this preferred vendors list during the process of our transaction, right? When we go from start to finish. So anything you could possibly need during your real estate transaction is already on the preferred vendors list. And then on the vendors list, we have lesser painters, right? And then you're going to give us your company's name, company's website, company's email address. Then if you can give any type of discount, so they might say $200 off for all real estate team people that they refer us, yada, yada, right? So it's all kind of descriptions. And then our clients get to choose who they want to work with from those painters, right? And then also in return, what happens is if I keep sending guys clients, they're like, oh, well, we just sent us another one. We just sent us another one, right? People start feeling like they owe you. And then it's going to reciprocate. So it comes back the other way around too, right? Where next time you are painting someone's house that they are thinking about putting it on the market and they're one step ahead, they're already painting it, but they haven't talked to a realtor yet. You're going to be like, hey, you know what? Logos Real Estate Team is the best here locally. Let me make the introduction, right? Because you're going to feel like I just sent you three painting clients. You need to send me one too, or three, right, in return. So it goes both ways. Now, what's most important to me in the way how vendors make it onto this preferred vendors list, because not anybody makes to them. The only people that I prefer to actually work with, and I work with them and I trust them and I recommend them get on that list. And so what's very important to me when it comes to painters, what I got learned from the past is that we recommended them, they didn't show up. Not that they would have not done a good job, but they didn't show up. The clients were like, maybe we scheduled with them three times and each time they, you know, they had a flat tire, they had to reschedule or something, right? And so for me, anybody that makes it onto the preferred vendors list are people that seem more ethical than I do, right? If they're flakes, they're not going to get on the preferred vendors list because then it's my reputation that you're messing with.
So accountability, I mean, it's clearly an extension of your brand, your customer experience. So it's paramount that that preferred vendor list represents you in a way that is reflective of the quality and the consistency that you give to your clients. So you had mentioned, you know, hey, look, these folks on the list, they've been vetted. We trust them. We know they meet our standards. Whenever you do have, let's say somebody retire or they move, for whatever reason, you have some turnover. And let's say specifically with a painter, how are you approaching finding a new painter? Where do you start? Where do you begin that process? I realize it's probably not you anymore. It's someone on your team, but how are you teaching your realtors to find a new painter when there's been turnover on the preferred vendor list?
Yeah, it's very simple, right? You just post it on our Facebook page and say, hey guys, we're looking for a new painter. Who do you know? Who comes highly recommended? Who does an amazing job? Who has a great reputation? And if that's the case, my team would need to, if you write first, we'll check out your online reputation, right? So we'll see your reviews online and like Google My Business or those type of things. And my team would meet with you, see if you guys hit it off, if we have the same vision of how we like to conduct business and how we work with each other. Then we would ask you to fill out the preferred vendors list and then ask you if you have any, you know, anything that you can give to our clients as a reason why they should work with you versus working with anybody else. And that's pretty much how it works. And you can have multiple, right? So you might have lenders for especially, they specialize in certain type of loans, right? So one lender might specialize in doctor's loan while the other lender specializes in rural development, right? And so we have multiple in the same category because we know we want to service all type of clients. So same with painters. You might do outsides and they don't do outsides, or you might paint cabinets as well in the kitchen and they only do walls, right? So there could be all kinds of things that, or you might have a much larger team with a much quicker availability than Joe Schmo over there, who's a one-man show, who does an amazing job but doesn't have any availability for the next 3 months, right? So we have to have multiple of everything in there just to be able to service our clients, because some people are rushed and like, oh shoot, we need to like paint now, we need to do this now, right? So it just depends what the needs are. But yeah, we definitely change our bill all the time.
Is there an element of the colors or the transformation? I guess when you're selling a property, someone's buying it, you know, there's probably one perspective on the colors on the outside inside of a home versus if they're selling it, preparing for sale versus buying it and owning it, making it yours. Two different situations there. But is there any element of the colors that come to mind from a conversation standpoint with a customer, or is that something that you don't necessarily come across very often as a realtor?
Oh, no, we do. I mean, there's always trends when the grays came in, right? Like when I got into real estate initially, was the browns and the reds and the yellows and now if you try to paint a yellow wall or a brown wall, they're like, whoa, what is wrong with you, right? That is so 2008, right? So absolutely, color is very important and you do have to be up with the trends. Now, I cannot tell my clients what color to paint, at the end of the day, it's their house. But as the expert, I can tell them, well, this one, I'm going to have a much easier time to market than I'm going to have this one. So the issue is the foot traffic, right? My job as a realtor is kind of multiple goals, but one of them is to market it properly. The better I market it, the more people come in the door, the fast possible way, the more offers we're going to get, the more opportunities we have, right? Versus if the photos are so bad, then no matter how much I market it, but the colors are hideous, right? I'm not going to be able to get them in on the door. If I can bring them in on the door, I can make them make an offer. They can possibly fall in love with your house, right? So color is very important. And I agree with you. When they are coloring it because they want to live in it, it's very different than they're coloring it because they want to sell it, right? So painting a house for resale purposes, you don't have to like it, but your idea is to sell it fast. You're going to move out of there. You're going to wave bye-bye. You're going to collect your money in your bank account and you're going to sail away, right? Versus having to live there is totally different. When I moved into my house, I'm European, right? So I had black kind of shiny cabinets. They were almost like a mirror. It's not normal in the US, right? It looked totally European. And everybody was like, oh, it's going to hurt your resale value. And I'm like, yeah, but I'm not building the house to sell it. I'm building to live in it, right? And then when I want to sell it, then I deal with the idea. I still own that same exact house 15 years later. We own our Michigan house. We now live in Florida. So I think it's important for people to understand, don't take things personally, right? Like that, design a home if you want to live in it to your liking, but if you want to sell it, then have it painted and decorated for what's trending now. Even if you need it, doesn't matter. It just needs to be trending. So people coming on the board, I'm going to buy it.
Well said. And do you help with designers, you know, color designers, or, you know, is that something that really your clients have designers? Is that a part of your vendor referral list? And does it help if a painter has a design team?
I sold when I was selling. Now I'm retired, right? My team does all the active selling. But even when I was still like Alexander Brown, I would do picks and stuff like that. Now I lived in the boonies and I sold in the boonies, where it's not a New York high rise, right? Or Miami high rise, where it's designer, it's not even a word in Pinckney, Michigan, right? People just decorate their home the way they like it. Now I might move the couches around. I might tell them it's not in anymore to have the couch pushed up all the way to the wall, right? Like I'll try to organize that. Now down here in Florida, having decorators and designers is absolute, just normal, right? That's how agents list a home on the market. They have a designer come in, they stage the home, they put it on the market, and voila, next thing you know, it's sold. So I think it's very market specific. If I was to try to start doing that in Pinckney, Michigan, on a level that they do it here in Florida, it would be a huge expense to me and I would never make that money back, right? It's just totally different market. So I think this is more of a market specific question, but if you have a design team that is can give kind of like a free advice, then I don't see why that couldn't work. I also did three-dimensional design. So meaning that the home was actually vacant, but when we posted it, it looked like it was decorated, right? But it was decorated three-dimensionally. So via computer, but you can't tell. They did such an amazing job. So that's also an option. It's just a surprise to the people when they show up that there's actually no furniture, right?
Yeah,
it's just for them to visually to be able to see the space without having to spend the money and all the furniture that needs to be hauled in and then moved out when closing happens.
Yeah, what a great point, right? And so many of the suppliers are, they've developed some pretty sophisticated tools for these color visualizers and creating this three-dimensional space that gives you a good representation of the furniture, the colors, and how everything comes together. So you had mentioned that your team is really the feet on the ground nowadays. And so I want to transition and talk a little bit about your team. And so you have over 1,000 realtors on your team. If you had to build your team all over again, what steps would you take?
I mean, you know, people ask this all the time, and I wouldn't change anything, right? I feel like everything, wherever you are in life, because of the life lessons that you have learned. So if you change something, you're going to have a different outcome, right? So I am happy where I'm at, and I'm happy of the life lessons, and I want you to learn what I know today. So I'd rather answer the question of what steps I took, what steps I wouldn't take again, right? Based on the lessons that I learned, but not necessarily if I would change anything, I wouldn't change anything, right? So when I joined, I'm with a company called eXp. It's a very different brokerage than other brokerages on the market. Like people are familiar with the Remaxes and the Coldwell Bankers and the Century 21s and the Keller Williams, right? Because that's how they always run real estate. So if you have any clue about the real estate market, right? You're familiar with those names because you see them driving by and you probably closed up one of those offices, right? But then you bought your phone. Now, when it comes to eXp, we are a cyberspace company. So we don't have physical locations. You're not going to see an eXp office unless a big team joined and they started an eXp office. Other than that, we don't have physical offices. So, but we also don't have any, we are not tied to location. So even though I'm licensed in Michigan and I live in Florida and I run a team up in Michigan, I have agents in 46 different states, six different countries. eXp is national and international, meaning we're in every single state in the US and we're in multiple different countries. So when I joined this company, I knew that now my location limitation is removed. Now I can build a team and partner with agents anywhere in this country and anywhere in 24 different other countries. Right. So I live with every opportunity that this company gave us, and I build the infrastructure. I love people. I talk to people all the time, random people on the internet, right? And that's pretty much how I built my businesses and how I built my EXP organization as well that we call Team Global today. There's over 1,050 of us, and they pretty much all reach out to me. So I have built my name through Google's Real Estate right on Instagram and have a verified account, and I go and speak. And so I built a good name and reputation for myself in the industry. And so when agents follow me, they see what's going on, right? They see that I have things in the real estate industry that they're not able to do with the current brokerage. They cannot own their debt back. They cannot build a downline or an international organization. They can't collect revenue share. They don't get ownership in the brokerage. So as showing the day-to-day in my life, right, they see, oh, hold on a minute, I don't have that. Let me talk to Google and ask her, how can I have that? Can I have that, right? And then that's pretty much how the conversation starts, is that they reach out to me, they jump into my calendar. I end up telling them everything that our company offers, what it's like to partner with me, what it's like to have me as a business partner. I don't charge, I don't take a cut. They owe me absolutely nothing. All of my trainings, coachings, my boot camp, everything is free to everybody in the Team Google organization. So it's pretty much what we offer, but the idea is that they find it and they raise their hand when they are ready, right? So they come to me. So I'm not convincing anyone to change brokerages when they are ready and they're ready for something new, or at least open for something new. They come and they jump into my calendar and we have a good old conversation. And if they decide they like what they see, they end up joining us. So through the process of this, I had to build websites, I had to build the infrastructure, the systems, the processes, right? And sometimes they work, sometimes they don't. So those type of things that you change over time, right? But as for the whole, and I would never change anything because they would have a totally different end result. I look at every failure, so Saturday night, which I don't believe they're failures, they're just ways that maybe didn't work out, right? I look at every single one of them as a lesson. Just like Edison said, when they asked him, you know, you failed 1,000 times creating the light bulb, he said he didn't fail 1,000 times. He just found 1,000 ways that did not work.
Yeah, I love it. You have to have that mentality of optimism, right? And be solution focused. You can really develop, you know, some paralysis by analysis and not even take the action, or be so fear driven that you don't take the action, or you just give up because you quote unquote failed, versus, you know, being optimistic and positive in the pursuit of success, which is filled with many different learnings that get you to the right answer. And then you just get good at not repeating the same mistakes. So yeah, you know, a lot of what you mentioned there, Coco, was building an authority within the industry and leveraging social media to put that authority on full display. And obviously having the right funnels and places to be seen so that, you know, you can give the opportunity to others to join your team. And then you can share your lessons and your learnings that you spoke about earlier. You know, so many years of mistakes, if you can have them in a playbook and shortcut your path to success, that is clearly a winning formula. And again, very similar to franchising. And, you know, really, I think it's just business, right? And scaling. And really what we're talking about is building a team. So creating the authority, having the systems, the processes. And so to that point there, Gogo, how do you create consistency in the results from your team as an extension of yourself without you having to be there?
Sorry, you were cutting out there for a second. How is something with my team? I didn't hear what.
How do you create the consistency of the behavior in your team that is a, you know, representation of yourself and your playbook?
Yes, most of my assistants, I have 17. I have 2 in person. One is actually technically in person at my house at all times. And then Christy, my other American employee, she's up in Michigan, right? But everybody else is a virtual assistant from another country. So the way we do it is that in the first 2 or 3 months, they literally follow me everywhere I go on Zoom calls, right? So every Zoom call I have, no matter if it's their job or not, they come to the Zoom call because they need to understand who I am, how I work, what I stand for, what kind of things that we do. I run multiple companies, right? We own multiple companies. So they need to understand the big picture first, right? And then they start putting together the picture of how they fit the mold, how they fit the puzzle, right? And then they're going to start training specifically for their job. So pretty much I have my executive assistant, Miss Lindsay, and she goes everywhere I go. Every online appointment, she's usually comes to these podcasts too. She just sits in the background in case we need her, right? And then her assistant, she goes to everywhere Lindsay goes. So I technically have 2 people go everywhere I go at all times. Now, I'm not good at links. I don't have the patience to find them in Google Drive. So if I'm talking about my favorite book, or if I'm talking about a tracker, or whatever that I'm talking about in the background, they're looking it up and plugging it into a chat box, right? So I think it's very important, especially for your social media game, for the people that work with you, to understand of who you are, how you think, how you work, how you would respond to things, right? So for a while, I have multiple social media assistants that help in specific forums or Facebook groups or emails or LinkedIn or whatever the job is, right? And so for a while, they asked me, hey, Gogo, how would you answer this? So if they don't know what I would say, they didn't respond until I tell them how to respond. So I'm huge on voice notes. They would send me a screenshot. I'll send them a voice note. This is what I would say. And then they type it up and say that. Now, next time when a question similar to that comes in, they don't have to ask me anymore because they know what I would respond. Right. So the idea is not to lose yourself and your brand in the making. Right. So when people represent you, they have to walk and talk like you do. Right. The receiving end doesn't need to know it's not you. Sometimes it is closed and they're talking to one of my assistants, but most of the time they think they're talking to me.
So leveraging assistants. I mean, I've heard you say that since the beginning till now, 17 assistants. That's incredible. But they're clearly an extension of yourself and following you for 2 months. My goodness, can you believe that onboarding? But that is a thorough onboarding. And I'm sure, yes, they're thinking and on the same page, most certainly. But my gosh, Gogo, I could talk to you for another 10 hours, but I know your schedule, my schedule, we're making it happen and leveling up. So Gogo, it's really been a pleasure hosting you and having you on the show. I've learned so much. I'm sure our audience has learned so much and really inspired by what you've done, the American dream that you've created for yourself. I really admire your story and who you are, what you represent, and how you do business. Just keep doing you. I know you don't need to hear that from me, but just know you have another fan, and I'm sure you captured some more by being on the show. If anyone would like to reach out to you, Gogo, how can they do that?
So the best way is Gogo's Real Estate on Instagram. On there, you actually get me personally. Everywhere else, you're going to be talking to one of my assistants. So if you go on Instagram and you go to Gogo's Real Estate, this is me. You're going to be talking to me personally. You can also find me anywhere under Gogo Bethke. So gogobethke.com. We also have a TV show now that's called Gogopreneur that's coming out on Roku this month. So pretty much if you look up Gogo Bethke or Gogo's Real Estate, Gogo's Bootcamp, Gogopreneur, all of these different Gogo brands, right? Team Gogo, you're going to find us.
Well, you heard it right from Gogo. Go check her out. You have plenty of places to find her online, and I guarantee you will be inspired by her lifestyle, and you may have a little bit of FOMO, but please like this show, subscribe, but more importantly, please comment, contribute to the conversation. We've covered so much in today's show. We'd love to hear your thoughts, and as always, level up.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Level Up with Nick Lopez Show. Remember, it's never too late to get started on your entrepreneurial journey. Don't forget to subscribe, like, and share if you enjoyed today's segment. Catch us again next week and visit limepainting.com for more of the Level Up with Nick Lopez Show.